What are you turning into, some kind of feminist?
It's a man, baby!
Light bulb.
Oh, my.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
You are some messed up white people.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Ooh, that's the motto of every politician in Washington, D.C. and beyond. It's not a lie if you believe it. I think we've seen that to be true practically every time we look at the news, haven't we? Good morning and welcome into the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here for your Wednesday edition, live on Facebook and delayed via podcast to listeners all over the place. Good to have you along. Thank you so very much for being there. I appreciate it more than you know. Hopefully you had a good day yesterday and looking forward to a good day today. It is a in our neighborhood where the studio is, it's kind of overcast, and we're looking at some nasty weather coming in the evening. So we're all getting ready for another bumpy ride. We've been having them a lot here lately in the Southeast, and it's people are getting geared up and ready for some severe weather. Hopefully, we don't have many problems out of it this time. But the weather forecasters here are very good about letting us know, giving us the heads up, and we appreciate it a lot. Hopefully things are good where you are, and as I said, you're looking forward to a good day. Today, once again, I'm not going to be able to get to everything I'd like to talk to you about, which is a good reason to subscribe to the daily newsletter, but you're going to get as much of it as I can. There's a new map out that shows it's not safe to wear new shoes anywhere in the city of San Francisco, California. We'll look at why, if we can get around to it today. Senator Dianne Feinstein is lying again. Some tax accountants have something to say about the tax cuts we've recently had. Donald Trump has a challenger on the Republican side. We'll take a look at that. Democrats are not happy about what Trump has said about doing something with sanctuary cities. A city in Arizona has decided to shut everything down and ask for some federal support. We'll look into that. And we'll start things off by looking back at Paris and the burning of the cathedral at Notre Dame. French billionaires. I mentioned this yesterday. It was yesterday. I mentioned that at least one French billionaire had stepped up and offered a great deal of money to help with the rebuilding process. And President Macron has stepped forward and said, we're going to rebuild this in 5 years. 5 years, we'll have it rebuilt. And there are those who are questioning whether it can be done in 5 years. And my first question was, why would it take 5 years? But then again, it is a historic site. It is, they want to take every bit of care they can and making sure they get every detail right. But 5 years? Okay. Well, French billionaires and large companies have been offering hundreds of millions of dollars to repair the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris after a fire caused severe damage to the iconic church Monday. A fire destroyed the roof and spire of the cathedral. Firefighters managed to put the blaze out before it destroyed the building's two towers. Artifacts inside, including what's believed by Catholics to be the crown of thorns worn by Jesus, a piece of the true cross, and a nail from the crucifixion, all of those were saved. Pieces of artwork from inside the building were also rescued. No one was seriously injured in the fire. There actually was one injury. There was a firefighter, but he's okay now. While the exact cause of the fire is still unknown, French authorities have speculated it may have been related to the restoration work that had been going on at the time. It is not yet clear what the cost of repairs will be. The interior of the building had largely been saved due to a stone vault ceiling underneath the now destroyed wooden roof. French President Emmanuel Macron said, we will rebuild all together. It's part of the fate, the destiny of France and our common project over the coming years, and I am committed to it. Now, back to this about the exact cause of the fire. There's still a lot of speculation in the conspiracy theory circles, mainly because there has been so much There's been so much going on with Christian churches in France. You see, what it's hard for us to relate to here in America is that Europe is almost, well, essentially a post-Christian continent. In Europe, the church is not what it is here. It is largely symbolic. And people who are not church people or people of faith are leaning towards atheism and this current crop of atheism and Islam. And this current crop of atheists and Islamists, those people, those quote refugees, end quote, who have fled Islamic countries, are bringing with them their intolerance for any other religion than theirs. And they've been taught this because it is in their holy teachings. It's in their books. If you don't believe me, just do your own research. It's there. I'm not here to school you about that. The situation is that in a lot of cases, churches are being vandalized by people who are trying to stamp out any other religion but their own. And there are those who are trying to tie the Notre Dame fire to that. At this point, everybody involved who can speak officially is making painstaking steps to avoid linking that. And that is another reason that people who tend to be a little conspiracy theory oriented are saying, see, they're denying it. It's got to be true. Maybe, maybe not. At this point, it's hard to say. I mean, could it have been some guy on a scaffold somewhere up high in the church smoking? Yep, could have been. Could have flicked a cigarette butt off in the wrong place, and the next thing you know, the world's burning. Because it's old, it's dry, it's wood. So it could have happened that way. It could have happened any number of ways. At this point, we really don't know how. And even though I am one who sees, I don't see demons behind every bush, but I am very suspicious of many, many things, I'm not willing to quite go there just yet. When we have some confirmation, yeah. Yeah, but not right now. Those committed to helping pay for the restoration include Salma Hayek's husband, the actress Salma Hayek's husband, François-Henri Pinault. He's the head of a luxury conglomerate called Kering. And his father, also, they together pledged 100 million euros. That's $113 million. In a statement posted on Twitter, Pinault said, "Faced with this tragedy, my father and I have decided to contribute to the funds needed to fully rebuild Notre Dame de Paris in order to bring this jewel of our heritage back to life as soon as possible." Bernard Arnault, the head of the LVMH group, that's Louis Vuitton, Christian Dior, Sephora, Marc Jacobs, and Givenchy, announced a 200 million euro, that's $226 million, donation of his own. French oil and gas company, Total, promised 100 million euros, that's 113 million, in U.S. currency. And consulting and technology firm, I can't even pronounce this one, it's a Cajamini, I guess, offered another million euros. So there's quite a bit of money that has been offered up, more than $450 million to help in the rebuilding. So they're going to rebuild, and the question is it going to take 5 years or what? When you look at the pictures, and there are pictures all over the web now of the damage, you can see that a lot of the interior that I think many assumed was just doomed, gone for, is actually not in bad shape because of that stone ceiling that was above between those areas and the roof, the wooden roof which burned. So we'll have to see. We'll see what happens as the progress continues. Now, there's also, and I don't have this in the notes today, but there are those in Europe who are saying, well, when they rebuild it, they need to get rid of all of the, actually, essentially, the things which make it precious to people of faith in Europe. And that's just nuts. For example, here we are. Let me see. All right. I think I found it here. And if this is what I think it is, then I'll copy it and paste it into the show notes for today. I'm waiting for it to come up here. It's from Daily Wire. In the wake of Notre Dame's inferno, while many people hope to see that magnificent landmark to God grace the Parisian skyline, once again, others see the burning of the iconic Catholic cathedral in a far different light. Take the recent response by Rolling Stone, for example, which promotes a quote from an architect hailing the fire as, quote, an act of liberation, end quote. The Rolling Stone's E.J. Dixon asks in the title of an op-ed published yesterday, how should France rebuild Notre Dame? Rather than give the obvious answer, which is exactly as it was, Dixon goes on a flirt with the idea of Notre Dame becoming something else, forever ridding it of the meaning that so many people ascribe to it, which the article suggests is some kind of pathological clinging to a past that never was. You see, that is a very atheistic argument. Oh, this stuff is all a lie. That never happened. It doesn't exist. Quote, the damage wrought by the Notre Dame fire has also raised important questions about the cathedral's symbolic significance in an increasingly divided France and how to rebuild, or which version of the cathedral should be rebuilt, going forward. And in some ways, these questions are all one in the same. That's what Dixon writes. While the author notes the vast, incalculable historic significance that Notre Dame holds, Dixon also highlights the modernists who feel resentment toward the cathedral, wondering if the building, the rebuilding, will meet their cultural needs as well. Quote, for some people in France, Notre Dame has also served as a deep-seated symbol of resentment, a monument to a deeply flawed institution and an idealized Christian European France that arguably never existed in the first place. If nothing else, the cathedral has been viewed by some as a stodgy reminder of the old city, the embodiment of the Paris of stone and faith, just as the Eiffel Tower exemplifies the Paris of modernity, joie de vivre, and change. That's what Michael Kimmelman wrote for the New York Times. To underscore this, Dixon includes a quote from Harvard University architecture historian Patricio Del Real, who said the cathedral had become, quote, overburned with meeting, and referred to the scourge of fire as an act of liberation. In Rolling Stone, to drive the point home, chose to highlight that quote in promoting the article on Twitter. And that promoted a swift backlash, because of course it did. While French politicians have stayed away from politicizing Notre Dame, French President Emmanuel Macron has announced the cathedral will be even more beautiful and has called for it to be rebuilt in 5 years. Quote, the fire at Notre Dame reminds us that our history never stops and we will always have challenges to overcome. He said that Tuesday night. We will rebuild Notre Dame more beautiful than before, and I want it done in the next 5 years. We can do it. After the time of testing comes a time of reflection and then of action. Experts speculate, however, the rebuilding of Notre Dame could take decades to rebuild. For instance, the roof was comprised of oak beams cut from centuries-old trees that likely do not even exist in Europe today. Duncan Wilson, chief executive of the conservation organization Historic England, told The Guardian, some of that material may be reusable, and that's a painstaking exercise. It's like an archaeological excavation. So that explains why some people are thinking it'll take longer than 5 years. Me, I'm looking at things from a perspective of here in America, where something falls apart, we get it rebuilt, and we get it rebuilt fast. We could have done that in New York City, but we didn't. They took so long to rebuild after 9/11. And many of us were saying, that's just crazy. They could have rebuilt that in a couple of years, but they didn't. And now we see this happening in France with Notre Dame. And because it is an archaeological treasure, so to speak, they're going to take as much time as they need to make sure it's rebuilt properly. But then there are those, as we've just heard, who hope to scrub it clean of all of its meaning because its true meaning offends their sensibilities and their twisted view of the world. And that is the sensibility we see creeping into our society as well. When you see people in social media condescendingly respond to you and criticizing you for your statements of faith. And it's a sad thing. Oddly enough, they talk about intolerance from you, and they themselves are even more intolerant. Up next, what's happening in Yuma, Arizona? Could be interesting to you, considering the way things are going on a national scale. That's when the Daily Perspective continues. You're listening to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Thanks for tuning in, so to speak. Thanks for listening. Mark Congleton here with you, keeping you company for a quick hour each weekday morning here on Facebook Live and via podcast. Thanks to those of you who have signed up and are getting the podcast every day. And thanks to those of you who are signed up for the daily newsletter. The daily newsletter is basically, essentially, the notes for the show. That's what it is. And sometimes a little extra material from time to time. Every now and then, something will start itching in my brain, and I'll start typing, and you get something else as well that's not on the show. And also, starting yesterday, or the day before, I forget when, my short-term memories, what was I talking about? Anyway, starting a couple of days ago, I'm also sending out the link to the actual recorded version of the show. So you've got that. You can share it with friends. You can pass that link along. And get some other people on board the party boat, and we can all have some fun together. So that's what the newsletter is. So get signed up today. The easy way to do that, I sent out a link the past couple of days. I've sent out links. I'll try to do that again today so you can share that link. But also, the easy way, just go to my website, markcongleton.com, and there's a form right there on the right column of the page. From time to time, I stick one up on the Mark and Mac Show website as well. And I'll try to remember to do that today as well. At any rate, there are a handful of ways for you to get signed up, take advantage of one of them, and become part of the growing family that's receiving the daily newsletter from the Daily Perspective. Okay? All right. Well, Yuma, Arizona, the mayor there, a guy named Douglas Nichols, he has proclaimed a local emergency. Did that at 3:10 p.m. yesterday. He did it because of an overwhelming release of migrants into the Yuma community. Nearly 1,300 migrant family members have been released by U.S. Border Patrol to the local shelter system just in the last 3 weeks. Mayor Nichols proclaimed a local emergency to urge for federal assistance as more migrant family units continue to be released into a shelter system already at capacity and maxed on resources and volunteers. The shelter system has a maximum capacity of 150 to 200 people, and it exceeded capacity. He says, migrants continue to be released at a rate that cannot be sustained, overwhelming the current nonprofit shelter system. He explained, it needs to be clear at the national level that Yuma cannot sustain this humanitarian crisis. The proclamation was signed in an attempt to avert hundreds of asylum-seeking migrants from being left without resources and potentially out in the greater community. By the way, this is a crisis that your Democrat politicians declare does not exist. They're saying there is no crisis at the border. Yes, they're lying to you. Again. Mayor Nichols explained migrant families released to the shelter are waiting to be transported to cities throughout the nation. They're not staying in the Yuma community. Prior to arriving at the local shelter, each migrant is processed through the Border Patrol, has been issued paperwork to travel in the United States, and has been ordered to appear at a court proceeding. The Border Patrol conducts health and background screenings of each migrant family member. Local law enforcement agencies are engaged and in communication at all hours of the day to keep the community safe. Let's back up just a bit. Each migrant is processed through the U.S. Border Patrol, has been issued paperwork to travel in the United States, and has been ordered to appear at a court proceeding. We know from what has already happened that last part, they're ignoring by and large. the vast majority of them never return for their court date. They find employment. They already have things lined up. They already know where they're going and who they're going to hook up with. And that's what they do. They go someplace. They know someone who has a job for them. And that's what they do. And the people who employ them know they're here illegally, and they don't pay them as much as they should be paid. That's going on in America right now. And it's all because of the way the laws are structured, the way our government has structured things at the border. Now, I won't go into a long talk about this, but what's happening on our southern border is intentional. It is part of this break the system methodology that the left uses. There are those who are intent on breaking the system, because if they can break the system, they can stir up enough emotional response, they can fundamentally transform the United States of America. Yeah, those are familiar words. Because remember, we are the people we've been waiting for. These people believe that they can change America. They believe that capitalism is evil. They believe that our founding fathers were all racists. They believe a lot of lies that they have been taught by the people who are guiding this entire effort. And it's been going on for quite some time. Now, I'm not going to go into any kind of conspiracy theory stuff here. I watched a video yesterday and sat there scratching my head thinking, wow, I understand what this guy is saying. I understand what he's talking about. He's got a lot of facts. But the way he's coming across, he sounds like a crazy man. And that's not the guy I want to be. I just want you to realize that the numbers of people coming to our border are increasing. This is a crisis. It really is happening. More and more people are coming. And we're seeing they are having interactions with police at the border crossings on the southern end of Mexico. They're tearing down barricades. They're ripping gates apart. They're fighting with police. These people are not the kind of people you want living in your community, by and large. Some of them have been lied to and they're being abused and used. Some of them are being manipulated. But some of them are bad characters. As President Trump said, there's some bad hombres coming across the border. That's absolutely true. There is a crisis on our southern border. Well, President Trump has made Democrats really unhappy about this. Democrats are speaking out about his threat to bus illegal immigrants to sanctuary cities, which, believe me, I think is a brilliant, it's a brilliant strategic move. We're just, okay, well, you decided you're going to be a sanctuary city or a sanctuary state for all of these illegals. You can have them. Well, the Democrats are not happy. Still, some leaders insist they'll welcome anybody with open arms. Last week, the president announced on Twitter, quote, due to the fact that Democrats are unwilling to change our very dangerous immigration laws, we're indeed, as reported, giving strong consideration to placing illegal immigrants in sanctuary cities only. The radical left always seems to have an open borders, open arms policy, so this should make them very happy. Yet, several Democrats are, in fact, not happy, particularly in California, home to many longtime sanctuary cities, which has statewide laws in place to protect illegal immigrants from deportation. The mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaaf, called the Trump administration's policy idea an outrageous abuse of power and characterized it as un-American.
Really?
The president called Schaaf out on Twitter, saying it was so interesting to see the mayor of Oakland and other sanctuary cities do not want our currently detained immigrants. She responded by insisting her city welcomes all, no matter where you came from or how you got here. Really? You can't have it both ways, Mayor. I'm sorry. California Governor Gavin Newsom also pushed back against the Trump threat. According to the LA Times, Newsom insisted the federal government is already dumping people in California by processing migrants legally seeking asylum at the border and releasing them into California before they have time to connect with their sponsors in the U.S. Hey, you know why that's happening? Bad law. That's why that's happening. Wake up. Smell the coffee. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office also weighed in. Spokeswoman Ashley Etienne saying in a statement, "The extent of this administration's cynicism and cruelty cannot be overstated. Using human beings, including little children, as pawns in their warped game to perpetuate fear and demonize immigrants is despicable and in some cases criminal." That's according to USA Today. And it goes on and on and on. So you see, the Democrats talk a good game, but when it comes to actually playing the game, oh, no, no, no. You can't do that. I think it's brilliant. Why? Because President Trump has succeeded in revealing them for the hypocrites they truly are. And he has them admitting to what he's been saying all along. It is a problem. It is a crisis. And some of these people really are bad hombres. This is The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. Keeping you company for a little hour in the morning. Nice to have you along. I just noticed that we had a little issue with the Facebook Live feed. That's corrected now. So, you faithful Facebook Live listeners, God, apologies for that, but if you subscribe to the newsletter, you'll get the show today. So, get over there to markcongleton.com and get subscribed, and you'll get a direct link to today's show so you can listen to it in its entirety and hear what you missed. Okay? All right. It'll come to you probably before 10 o'clock this morning, which... between you and me, is before podcast subscribers will get access to it. So, there you have it. See, there are bennies for signing up for the newsletter. Get signed up today. Go to markcongleton.com and sign up. I didn't explain, but you sign up. You just give me your first and last name, your email address. You'll get an email in response confirming that's what you really want. It's a double opt-in process. That's making sure that we make sure all the laws are satisfied and that you really do want to receive the newsletter. And once you've responded to the confirmation email, then you're on the list and you start receiving the daily newsletter. And you get to find out, you get to see what I talk about every day and the stuff I don't get to, because there's stuff in my list. I've got a stack of stuff here I'm just not going to get to. I'm just not. Like Mad Maxine Waters. Her FEC report shows she's continued controversial practices. She's still cutting big checks to her daughter. Even though she's been warned about that, she's still doing it. She's got her daughter managing her mailings. There was a kid, a 16-year-old, stabbed to death and set on fire in D.C. in a suburb by MS-13. I probably won't get to that story. And more. So those stories will be in the stack that you'll get if you subscribe today to the newsletter. Well, Donald Trump, who is riding a wave of positive opinion higher than Barack Obama did at this point in his presidency, is facing a challenger on the Republican side. Now, we know that there is a clown car full of candidates on the Democrat side. There's a bunch of wacky people on the Democrat side who are facing off because they think they can beat Donald Trump. Well, now, Monday afternoon, former Governor Bill Weld, Republican from Massachusetts, announced his candidacy for the 2020 Republican presidential nomination. In 2016, he ran for vice president on the Libertarian ticket with former Governor Gary Johnson. In that race, Weld infamously told voters to pull the lever for Democrat Hillary Clinton. He told MSNBC's Rachel Maddow just days before Trump was elected, "I'm here vouching for Mrs. Clinton." He claimed not to be endorsing Clinton since he was running against her, but the way Weld warned about Trump and the way he said he vouched for Clinton certainly sent a clear message about whom he'd rather see in the White House. He also endorsed Barack Obama in 2008, has long supported abortion, and was named U.S. Ambassador to Mexico by President Bill Clinton. By the way, in case you were wondering what a rhino is, this is a rhino. A Republican in name only. His party affiliation is Republican, but everything else about him is not. Weld chose a particularly inauspicious day to announce his candidacy. April 15th is the anniversary of President Abraham Lincoln's passing in 1865, the day of the RMS Titanic sinking in 1912, and the day Paris's stunning Notre Dame Cathedral caught fire. And it's tax day. Yeah, he picked a great day to announce, didn't he? So not only is he a rhino, he's an idiot. He said, "Ours is a nation built on courage, resilience, and independence. In these times of great political strife, when both major parties are entrenched in their win-at-all-cost battles, the voices of the American people are being ignored, and our nation is suffering." That's what he said in his announcement statement. He goes on to say, "It is time for patriotic men and women across our great nation to stand and plant a flag. It is time to return to the principles of Lincoln: equality, dignity, and opportunity for all. There is no greater cause on earth than to preserve what truly makes America great. I am ready to lead that fight." He slammed Trump in his campaign launch video for that Access Hollywood tape, the comments. His remarks after the white nationalist riots in Charlottesville, Virginia, and more. I will say that in order to slam him for those things, he had to take them out of context. He had to redefine their meaning. He had to change their intent in order to use them against him. Because the Access Hollywood tape, he was talking about groupies. It wasn't good, but he was still talking about groupies, women who throw themselves at celebrities. And after the white nationalist riots in Charlottesville, Virginia, he was clearly talking about people who are pulled into certain situations just because of the energy of the moment, not necessarily because they are staunch believers in what was being talked about or protested. And he said there were good people on both sides of that. So, and he was giving people the benefit of the doubt. Right. They're Nazis. They're white supremacists. And by the way, that whole thing was arranged by leftists. The whole thing was. So a lot of people were deceived. And that's also his meaning. So to use that against him, you have to accept and use the leftist translation of those things, which is, in short, a lie. In his announcement message, Weld noted his appointment as a U.S. attorney by Ronald Reagan, calling himself a Reagan Republican. Really? Given what we already know about the guy, he endorsed Hillary Clinton. He warned against Trump. He endorsed Barack Obama. He's a Reagan Republican? Really? When I tell you that these politicians believe that the people, you and I, are stupid, this is what I'm talking about. They believe people are stupid enough to believe them when they say, "Yes, I'm a Reagan Republican." A Reagan Republican, are you? A Reagan Republican endorsed Barack Hussein Obama with his questionable background? You endorsed him with his friends? With Bill Ayers? With those people in his background? Jeremiah Wright, with those people in his background, you endorsed Barack Obama and you're a Reagan Republican? Wow. How stupid do you think we... Oh, that's pretty obvious. Oh, gosh. His campaign announcement message reads, "Bill Weld is uniquely qualified to serve the American people as president. He has an unblemished record of service and leadership. In addition to 7 years in the Department of Justice, he served 2 terms as governor in Massachusetts, where he was reelected by the largest margin in state history. Weld does have an impressive fiscal conservative record. During his time in office, he cut taxes 21 times, never raised them, signed welfare reform, balanced the budget, oversaw 6 upgrades in the state's bond rating. He was ranked the most fiscally conservative governor in the country by the Cato Institute and the Wall Street Journal. I'll tell you this. He couldn't have actually done anything else as a Republican in Massachusetts, because Massachusetts, as I said, was known widely as Taxachusetts. So he had a lot to work with when he went in. But when you look at the fact that he endorsed Barack Obama, oh, please. Yet his stance on abortion, his advocacy on LGBT issues, and his frequent support for Democrats place him more in the libertarian than the Republican camp. He seems particularly ill-suited to challenge Trump at a time when Democrats' radicalism on abortion and against religious freedom are riling up Republicans. Yeah, well, he did run as a vice presidential candidate on the Libertarian ticket, so yeah. Weld has also supported unfettered immigration, open borders. Nice. And compared Trump's rhetoric on the issue to the actions of Nazis rounding up Jews. So you see, he's either an idiot or he thinks you are, because that's not what's going on here. Weld gives Republicans another choice in the primary. Yeah, I guess strictly speaking, he does. They can choose President Trump, who has largely proven his conservative credentials on every issue but cutting the debt, because the debt is getting deeper. Or they can choose Bill Weld, the Republican who has effectively endorsed the very Democrat he was running against, a pro-abortion candidate who has compared Trump to Nazis and a supporter of Barack Obama. So, even though this guy has stepped up and he's thrown his hat into the ring, he is going to go up against Donald Trump. He has no chance. No chance whatsoever. And it makes me wonder if possibly there are those on the left who are goading him into doing this, to split the vote. Well, he will split the vote, because there will be those, and I know some, there will be those who will vote for him because they can't stand Donald Trump. And they can't stand Donald Trump because they believe the mainstream leftist press and their assessment of him, which is insane. But as we've talked about many times here, these same people get their information from the evening news, and that's the only place they get their information from. They might actually pick up a newspaper. You remember newspapers, right? They might actually pick up a newspaper or possibly a magazine. You remember magazines, right? Well, they might pick those up and read extremely biased articles and form their opinions based on those. And they don't do any further research. They don't do their homework. They just listen to the evening news. And they listen to, oh, God help us, NPR. Because they believe it's balanced. And NPR is anything but balanced. If you listen to NPR, you need to prop something up under the left side of your radio and tilt it to the right to keep it from falling over. Because NPR is extremely leftist. But that's where they get their information. And they will vote for someone because they hate Trump. As I said, I know people who voted libertarian in the last election for that very reason. Had those people voted for Trump, there would have been much less question about who legitimately won, even though he did, because he carried the Electoral College. And the Electoral College protected us from Hillary Rodham Clinton. Bless our hearts. Bill Weld doesn't have a chance. But he's going to try. God love him. More after the break when the Daily Perspective continues. This is The Daily Perspective. It's my perspective on life, the universe, and everything. And no, it doesn't add up to the number 42. It's the midweek edition, a Wednesday edition. For those listening via podcast, we're recording this on Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. And we've had some fun looking over things. I actually was just tweaking the newsletter because now I know about how much I'm going to get through. So I think I can finalize that. And this is what's up next. We've heard a lot from Democrats about how horrible, how unfair the Trump tax cuts have been. Well, accountants disagree. People who actually really handle numbers and do taxes are saying, nearly 80% of them, actually. Nearly 80% of certified public accountants believe President Donald Trump's tax cuts helped America's small businesses, according to a poll commissioned by the Job Creators Network. Now, America's small businesses employ the vast majority of people who work in this country. So if nearly 80% of certified public accountants, CPAs, and these are not people who are crazy, you know, they're not prone to being bizarre. If they believe Donald Trump's tax cuts helped America's small businesses, we ought to sit up and take notice. According to the national survey of 102 certified public accountants representing over 5,500 small businesses, business pass-through clients across the U.S., conducted by Research Strategy Group International, nearly 80% of respondents believe that the implementation of the tax cut legislations has helped America's small businesses. That's what they said in a statement, which was timed for tax day. Moreover, almost as many also felt that the TCJA helped stimulate the economy. That was 76%. In conjunction with tax day, the Job Creators Network commissioned polling in order to find out what real tax professionals think about the impacts of the Tax Cuts and Job Act. That's the TCJA. Chiefly, how it's affected their small business clients. It's clear that the people who really understand the financial standing of small businesses know that the tax cuts are working. That's what the president of the JCN and the CEO, Alfredo Ortiz, said. He says, the tax cuts legislation that was implemented in 2018 has allowed small businesses across the country to thrive, which has contributed to one of the strongest economies in decades. Americans should remember that this tax day. Millions of Americans are reaping the benefits a year after President Trump's tax cuts legislation became law. A few highlights from the tax cuts legislation from Breitbart News economic editor John Carney. But two-thirds of American taxpayers will pay less in taxes for their 2018 earnings. Two-thirds, according to the Independent Tax Policy Center. 81% of the middle one-fifth of income earners received a tax cut. Just 5.5% of households got a tax hike of $100 or more. That's 5.5%. And most of those were in the upper income tax brackets. So you see, when these people are telling you it was a tax break for the rich, no, it wasn't. 48% of households are getting a tax cut greater than $500, according to the Nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation. The middle fifth of earners received about a $780 tax cut last year on average, according to the tax cut of the Tax Policy Center. A poll conducted by SurveyMonkey revealed in February that a majority of Americans, 51%, support President Donald Trump's tax reform law. And I would say that that other 49% doesn't, merely because of the negative press and the lies coming from the left. They're unsure or they don't believe. And I mentioned the other day, when we finished with our taxes, we got a bigger break than we thought we were going to. So things went well for us, and they went well for most. For most. And I've also told you that I've seen these people on social media saying, well, we ended up paying eight times more, you know, and I don't believe them. I just don't believe them. Primarily because there are so many out there who hate Trump, they will lie just because they hate Trump. Well, Senator Dianne Feinstein, we haven't heard from her in a while, have we? You remember Senator Feinstein. She's the one who will do anything to get her gun.
If I could have gotten 51 votes in the Senate of the United States for an outright ban, picking up every one of them, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, I would have done it. I could not do that. The votes weren't here.
See, she clearly doesn't have any regard for the U.S. Constitution. Really, she doesn't. Or truth or reality, for that matter.
Time has come, America, to step up and ban these weapons. The other very important part of this bill is to ban large capacity ammunition feeding devices, those that hold over 10 rounds. We have federal regulations and state laws that prohibit hunting ducks with more than 3 rounds, and yet it's legal to hunt humans.
Whoa, no, it's not. Everything she just said is a lie. Everything she just said is a lie. Keep that in mind. It's been a while since we've heard about Dianne Feinstein. Remember, she's the Democrat who had a Chinese spy as her driver for 2 decades. Like most Democrats, she was doing her best to convince Americans that the GOP tax cut plan hurt the middle class and the poor because they only benefited the rich, even though this talking point has been debunked about a gazillion times. But that didn't stop her from trying to pretend it was Trump's fault. Californians' taxes went up. She said on Twitter, nearly 1 million California households will pay more this tax day, thanks to President Trump's tax cuts for the wealthy. Middle-class families are being forced to pay more so the rich and large corporations get a tax cut they don't need. The problem with that is that it was a subsidy cut. The other states are no longer subsidizing California's ridiculously high taxes. Dianne Feinstein is really concerned about her constituents paying higher taxes. She should work to clean up her own house first. This is all coming to us from Twitter on social media. Someone who calls himself Mr. Tasty Media responded, saying, California is essentially the most social, economic, segregated state in the union. You basically have the wealthy and those who service them. It's incredibly creepy when you see it for the first time. It's modern segregation. And somebody else said, hey, are you using Common Core math again? Someone else writes, middle-class families received a tax cut in their paycheck. It was made immediately available to them. Don't blame Trump that there is an extreme shrinking middle class in California. That has to do with the Democrats' progressive policies. Gas being $4 a gallon hurts more. And then there was someone else who just said, why do you insist on lying to the American public? So, Dianne Feinstein, along with many other Democrats, is lying to America about the tax situation. You see, if you look back over your paycheck stubs for the past year and compare them to the year before, keeping in mind, if you didn't receive a pay increase of some kind from your employer, you'll notice that you got a little more in each paycheck, because your taxes went down. Now, that also means that if you file in a way that you get a big refund every year, you got a smaller refund. And they're trying to spin that to convince people that the tax cuts hurt them because they got a smaller tax refund. Well, you got a smaller tax refund because less was taken out of your paycheck. That's why you got that money every pay period instead of getting it back in a lump at the end of the year. So these people are being disingenuous, as usual. They're being dishonest, as usual. They're lying, as usual, because they know that they can twist the facts and deceive a lot of people. Why? Because those people aren't really paying attention and doing their due diligence. they're just getting their information from social media, the evening news, and the like. They don't do any more digging. And they base everything on their gut, their emotions. They're offended by something, so it's wrong. But they don't dig to find out why. And they believe people like Senator Dianne Feinstein. Well, she's a senator. She wouldn't lie. Yes, she would. We're talking about a woman who had a Chinese spy as her driver for 2 decades. She didn't do the right amount of digging on who she employed. We're talking about a woman here who actually had the gall to say that legal firearms are responsible for death. She's ignoring the fact that 3% of gun deaths are caused by rifles. 3%. And 67% of that 3% is suicide. But she's all on board for banning a certain kind of rifle because it looks scary. And you're going to believe her when she talks about your taxes? Oh, come on. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. God bless you. Have a good one, and we'll see you tomorrow here on The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.